So when I think about the state of our world, which I do a lot, do you do that a lot? Some of us do that a lot. My mind goes so very quickly to what is broken, right? Entire ecosystems are broken. Weather patterns, fire seasons, glaciers, habitats and homes, food chains, topsoil, reciprocity, relationship, civility. There's so much, and the need is so big, and that for me is often overwhelming, hence the thundering boot claps as Genevieve was asking us to sound out our rhythms. And even before I let myself even wrestle with how big that is, I'm already thinking about all the things I can do about them, right? I'm not even finished thinking about them before I'm going, oh, I'm gonna run and do this. Oh, I'm gonna run and do that. I have to do these things. It's like, I think the solution is to do things. Huh. I love how Martha Postlethwaite flips this on its head. Instead of talking about all the ways our world is in need of rescue, she starts and reminds us that it is worthy of rescue. She moves my heart into remembering the good and the beautiful things in life. What comes to your mind and your heart when you let yourself think about what is good and beautiful in life? Think about the colors in the market when I visited Oaxaca, Mexico. I think about the little bitty sprouts that I'm starting to see in the places that the snow is receding. I'm thinking about snuggling with my puppy this morning, with my child last night. Sorry. Thinking about all of us here. As I look at all your faces. Good, beautiful things. What's more, Pastor Martha reminds us that we are not called to take on the saving of all of that, that we are called to create a clearing and wait until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize and greet it. It's a countercultural message, right? To stop and remember what is good and beautiful, and then wait and find out what is actually ours to do, instead of diving in and exhausting ourselves trying to do all of the things. Tricia Hersey is an artist, poet, theologian, and community organizer. She's the founder of the NAP Ministry and the author of Rest is Resistance, a Manifesto. In March of 2020, we all remember March of 2020, Tricia Hersey wrote on her website called the NAP Ministry, "During this week, we have buckled in and created enough digital content to last us another decade. I've noticed this tendency in our culture to skip steps during trauma. We jump right to getting over it immediately, leaving no space for the precious ritual of grief, rest, and lament. In our minds, there's no time for stopping to process, even in a global pandemic that has killed thousands. I have heard very little about the lives of the people who are now gone, and instead been overwhelmed with 10,000 streaming videos to work out, sing, build a treehouse, bake bread, teach math to kids, play an instrument, go to church, and everything else under the sun. We want to remain in the way it always was, super productive and focused on doing, even when the systems around us are failing and slowing down." Right? This is one aspect of what she calls grind culture, the intersection of white supremacy and capitalism that has conditioned us to believe that we must at all times be productive. And more so for her as a Black woman than for me, as she writes on the Nat Ministry, capitalism was created on plantations during chattel slavery and is the same system that is driving the entire globe to exhaustion and a deep disconnection with our bodies and minds today. We are no longer divine human beings in this system and instead machines, she writes. She tells us that rest isn't just about our own self-care, and that it's most definitely not about taking a break so we can go and be more productive afterward, but that it is an act of resistance to the entirety of grind culture. And she writes, this is about more than naps. It's not about fluffy pillows, expensive sheets, silk sleep masks, or any other external, frivolous, consumerist gimmick. It's about a deep unraveling from white supremacy and capitalism. These two systems, she writes, are violent and evil. History tells us this, and our present living shows this. Rest pushes back and disrupts a system that views human bodies as a tool for production and labor. It is a counter-narrative. We know that we are not machines. We are divine. What is worthy of rescue here is our own humanity. Learning to see ourselves as full human beings, as divine beings, if that is language you use, as beings that are connected with each other and that which holds us all, rather than as agents of productivity, is resistance to not just one, but several avenues of deep harm. Grind culture isn't just the root cause of our exhaustion, as if that weren't enough. It's also the root cause of the harm done to our Earth home and the current climate crisis. And so, rest as resistance also pushes back against extraction culture. Another aspect of grind culture, the idea that the Earth is no more than a resource from which we can just keep taking. Having said that, I'm going to go back to Martha Postlethwaite's words again for a moment. What would it look like for you to rest long enough until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize and greet it? Let's stop and take a breath together. Let our hearts consider that question. One thing that my heart calls to as I consider that question is about a thing I've been learning about as another way in to recognizing and greeting the song that's in my life. And that's pleasure. Pleasure. Adrienne Marie Brown talks about healing spaces in public. Through her writing, her music, and her podcasts, Adrienne has nurtured emergent strategy, pleasure activism, radical imagination, and transformative justice as ideas and frameworks and networks and practices for transformation. In an article for Yes Magazine last year, Adrienne wrote, "Feeling good is not frivolous." How many of us feel guilty when we feel good? Feeling good is not frivolous, she writes. It is a measure of freedom. not just the physical freedom of the body to pursue the pleasures of the flesh, but also the mental, emotional, and spiritual freedom to feel happy, content, and present in our brief and potent lives. This is the basic tenet underlying one of the things I often say we need to work toward: a world where all of us can not only survive, but thrive. Pleasure and thriving go together. The basic idea of pleasure activism is that all humans deserve to feel good. I'm going to read a good chunk of Adrienne's words here because I can't say it any better. She begins this article in Yes Magazine with these words. As Audre Lorde shared in her 1978 groundbreaking essay, Uses of the erotic as power, the fear of our desires keeps them suspect and indiscriminately powerful. For to suppress any truth is to give it strength beyond endurance. The fear that we cannot grow beyond whatever distortions we may find within ourselves keeps us docile and loyal and obedient, externally defined, and leads us to accept many facets of our oppression as women. Our acts against oppression, Audre Lorde continues, become integral with self, motivated and empowered from within. In touch with the erotic, I become less willing to accept powerlessness or those other supplied states of being which are not native to me, such as resignation, despair, self-effacement, depression, self-denial. Adrienne writes, it is important for me to uplift Lorde's words for these three reasons. One, because the fact that there is a gift of liberating exotic erotic power thrumming within each of us is something we have known far longer than I have been alive. The denial of that power by systems like colonization and patriarchy is one of the central ways we stay oppressed. Recognizing this power is essential to reclaiming our freedom. Two, because the answers to many of our current problems, both the systemic inequities and our collective unhappiness, lie in the writing and thinking of Black feminists like Lorde. We have a unique intersectional lens on what is happening: slavery policing practices, arrogant rejections of climate-based adaptations, critical race theory battles with burning books, to name only a few, and what needs to shift. And three, because we are in a pattern of behaviors and practices that, as Lorde writes later in her essay, do not enhance our future. And it is past time to alter our entire ecosystem, human, environmental, and planetary. Adrienne continues, we are living in an age of immense interlocking crises, from climate to pandemic to race. Though there are massive opportunities to grow and change, the fight for abolition, the proliferation of mutual aid in response to COVID-19, erotic power, happiness, and satisfaction are not words I would use to describe our current collective state. Power, happiness, and satisfaction are not words I would use to describe our current collective state. She goes on, for those identities I do not share, I will assert, with space for correction, that I do not observe a lot of truly content white people, or men, or straight people, or skinny people, or business people, or politicians, or deniers of the ongoing pandemic. I travel a lot less these days, but in my readings and conversations with my global community, I do not see unfettered joy among people in most other nations either. The work of oppression, division, supremacy, and dominance is constant, which means our work to survive injustice is constant. Because many of us live under capitalism in cultures committed to the belief that material possessions can heal spiritual wounds, we've been convinced that economic dominance, even if it's inherited, can fill up our cup of value and worth, and yet misery, suffering, rage, and despair are about. And she asks the questions that light me up. What if we understood our purpose as love? What if the same energy we now spend on our individualized competitions was instead investing in loving each other and loving the place we've been gifted as home, the only place in the known universe that can be our home? What if we understood that the felt experience of love is most present in that sense of commitment, of contentment? What if we understood that the felt experience of love is most present in that sense of contentment, happiness, and satisfaction? What if we all knew that love can heal the wounds of isolation, abuse, generational trauma, scarcity? What would our world look like if the economy were structured to give people deep satisfaction at every level of existence, instead of constantly sowing competition, discontent, and the sense that there is something else, something better than what we have, or where we are, or who we are? These light me up because they're the same questions that Unitarian Universalism is asking in a much more detailed and real way, in ways that only Adrian has words for. What would it look like to put love at the center? She gets more detailed, of course. When she writes about pleasure activism, she's working to respond to these questions, and she offers a set of principles that can be said as tool, that can be seen as tools to help us align with contentment, with happiness, with joy, with pleasure. I'm going to share each of them with my own really brief reflection on each. She says, what you pay attention to grows. We get to choose what we pay attention to. We get to choose love. Sometimes we choose fear. But we get to choose, and what we choose is what grows within us and between us. She says, make justice and liberation feel good. Make them feel good. Sing in the streets. Gather in community, support each other, eat together, have fun. She says, we become what we practice. We become what we practice. In this community, I think we practice love. We practice care. We practice welcome. We practice listening to each other, especially in our covenant groups. We practice making things. We practice creativity. I think we practice joy. What do we need to practice? She says, yes is the way. Yes is the way. I think of that in terms of Pastor Martha's poem, right? Opening that clearing, figuring out what is our yes. Taking the time and the space to do that. The rest, as Tricia Percy says. Adrian says, when I'm happy, it is good for the world, right? And she's not talking about, you know, birthday cake. Although that makes us happy too, right? She's also talking about the happiness that we find when we find purpose, when we find meaning, when we act in service, when we share together those things, as we do here. The deepest pleasure, she says, comes from riding the line between commitment and detachment. When I read what she says about that, she's reading about detachment in terms of detachment from outcomes. Find joy in the work. It's hard to do. I don't do it well. I want those outcomes. She says, your no makes the way for your yes. We can't do everything. And if we keep trying, we're going to end up doing nothing. back to Pastor Martha, do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Find your clearing. Say the no's you need to say to find that clearing so you can find your yes. And finally, she says, moderation is the key. Moderation is the key. Maybe not moderation in pleasure so much, but moderation in terms of knowing I have enough. I don't need to keep buying stuff. I don't need to keep grinding because I have enough. If I can know that, then maybe there's a little more joy. I'm reminded, like I was last week, when I was talking about the role of vulnerability in the work of active hope. I'm reminded of Howard Thurman's words, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive and go do that. Because what the world needs is people who've come alive. If we do what gives us pleasure, we are already resisting the harm of grind culture by doing what gives us pleasure, and we are on the way to putting love at the center. There is so much more wisdom from these two women. I could talk for days. I'm not going to talk for days. I am just barely scratching the surface. I'll be sending our webminder, who I know is here somewhere, I'll be sending Susan an email later with a bunch of links to articles and podcasts that she'll put on our worship archive page for this service. And you can read and you can listen to Adrian and Tricia talk about these things. Reading and listening to them directly is a good start to this process that Tricia Hersey names as vital. Begin the process, she writes, of deprogramming your brainwashing under grind culture. Go slow. Learn history. Learn your own history. View your body as its own unique technology. I haven't said a word about that. You're going to have to listen to the podcast. Listen, she says. So I invite us all to do that. Stop, make a clearing, explore the ideas of these radical thinkers, and then go further if you haven't already. Take the time to dig into the history that has informed their thinking. Tricia Hersey writes that anyone who uplifts a message of rest as a form of resistance without tapping into the history of Black liberation and the evils of capitalism is nothing but an agent of grind culture. Sorry, Tom. Do not listen, she says. You should instead read texts on Black liberation. Bell Hooks, James Cone, Toni Morrison, Katie Cannon, Audre Lorde, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. For my part, I will continue to bring us wisdom from these ancestors, as well as from current scholars and activists, as we keep exploring the paths of resistance this month and throughout our shared ministries. May it be so, and may we be so.